Now, a couple of years ago, they made a Fantastic Four movie, very low budget.
Yeah.
It never really saw the light of day.
It wasn't supposed to. That movie was made just so that somebody wouldn't lose the rights to make the real movie later.
They had an option on the property.
Yeah, he would have lost his option if he didn't begin principal photography by a certain date. So for a budget of like $1.98, he did that movie, which was really pathetic because the people who did the movie didn't know that it was never intended to be shown.
Right.
They acted and directed and photographed their hearts out.
Right.
They did the best they could, you know?
The experience was one of the strangest I've ever had, and the result was one of the strangest. What's the budget? He said, $30 million. And I said, how much money do you have? $1 million. And I said, well, that's cutting a budget fairly drastically from $30 million to $1 million. Let me send it down to the boys at the studio. Let them work on it over the weekend. We met Monday morning and said, we'll go ahead.
Roger went ahead and started a whole campaign to release the movie. In the contract, there was no clause in there that said he could not release the movie.
We prepared the trailer, TV spots. We prepared a really nice poster. We were ready to go, and Bert came to me just before with a check.
All of a sudden, there was no movie. Roger called me. He said, Olio, I just want to tell you thank you for doing a great job. We're not going to release the film. I got paid $1 million not to release the movie. I just want to thank you for doing a really great job. And that was it.
I think for $1 million, it's a pretty good film. I think people think of it affectionately.
After 22 years, people are still talking about this movie, and I doubt seriously in 22 years from now they'll be talking about the other Fantastic Four movies.
From the pages of the world's greatest comic book adventure, four heroes on a daring mission in space, but something went wrong. Genetically transformed, they become the most powerful superheroes of all time. But the forces of evil are out to destroy their cosmic power. And to survive, they must utilize all their strength. To put an end to their arch nemesis.
Doom? It's clobber time.
Fantastic Four.
Following program has adult language and potential spoilers. Listener beware.
The Marvel superheroes have arrived. The Avengers in America.
Fantastic Four.
Spider-Man.
Iron Man.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Marvel Superheroes Podcast. I'm Olivia Machine. With me is
Diablo Frank.
And
Fix It.
And today we're going to talk about Roger Corman's Fantastic Four from 1994.
See, I kind of contest that because...
Well, then you intro
the movie. No. I'm saying...
Well, now you intro it.
I assure you can search Fantastic Four 1994, and that's one of the things that's going to come up. The movie was beginning to shoot at the end of 1992. It was completed around 1993. They were already talking about doing showings. I think they might have actually done a showing in 93. The movie was never actually released. So where the fuck did they get 1994 from? Did they show like at the mall or whatever? Did they have did they get that?
I think it's like an honorary title, kind of like when you say Batman, you say Batman 89 is my Batman, because there's so many Batmans out there.
Is that possibly the fake release date that it was supposed to
have? No, I think it's supposed to be like Memorial Day of 93, so I don't know where the 94 part comes from.
I don't know, man.
Random.
Anyway, it just shows up whenever I search.
So, Mr. Fix-It, you watched the Doomed documentary.
Yes.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about the backstory and how this movie came to be.
You watched it yesterday. Why don't you? I saw this months ago.
Well, because when it first popped up on Hulu. Okay, show of hands. How many people fell asleep during our viewing of the 1994 Fantastic Four movie just now?
In the middle of the afternoon.
I think everybody's hand went up.
Let
on
the
that
record.
One. Wait. No, Frank, you fell asleep too, you asshole.
No,
I looked over and I saw you.
I dozed a little, but I remained conscious.
Okay, see, I was conscious too. I could hear what was going on.
And Mac, you were fucking passed out. You were snoring so loud that we had to turn up the volume.
Hey, dude, this is like, what's that ambient for me, dude? I'm gonna take this shit home and just put it on a play when I go to bed.
Mr. Fix-It straight apneaed out during this one. Like, I was about to have to go resuscitate him.
He was like an old Woody Woodpecker cartoon where the guy's sawing a log and you can actually hear the teeth grinding into the wood. That's how fucking out of it you were.
How far asleep were you then?
I just dozed a little. You know, I still retained consciousness.
Uh-huh. So we both fell asleep. Did you fall asleep, Mac?
There's no comparison.
I did not fall asleep.
Yes. Well, okay, so here's a question. Had you actually seen the movie before this?
You know, man, watching it, parts of it seem very familiar.
Yeah.
It is possible I watched this like maybe really late one night.
Mm-hmm.
I just threw it on fucking YouTube and watched it. But I'm going to go ahead and just say no for record.
Okay. And then, Mr. Pinson, when did you see the movie?
I want to say I've seen this movie.
I don't know if we want to do that, though, because let's see. Let me just a brief explanation, even though Mr. Fix-It saw the same damn documentary as me.
Like 6 months ago.
You can't explain the origins of this movie.
I mean, basically, Fox did not want to lose the rights to the film.
The producer.
The producer didn't want to lose the rights to the film, so they had to produce something, some kind of show to show that they were still developing. They couldn't have it just in development. So they went to Corbin, who was famous for making, you know, low-budget films. They threw him
And they also went to Lloyd Kaufman, which I think is very notable. Because you could almost validate, okay, well, you went to Corbin, you've got a limited budget, sure. When you go to Lloyd Kaufman, something fishy going on, because Troma has not a great reputation in terms of, like, there's no
credibility. Well, the Toxic Avenger, man, come on.
I'm not saying they haven't ever had anything commercial, but in terms of commercial prestige, is this a legit deal? Troma's involved, it's not a legit deal. You know?
I'm sure at the time they weren't sure.
Bargain basement, it's exploitation shit.
It's really weird. I remember distinctly in the documentary where the actors, everyone involved in the film truly believed this was going to have a theatrical release. They did press junket, or not a junk, like not even a press junket, like what? Local Comic-Con junket or some shit?
No, okay.
Where they took pictures.
Well, we're getting a little ahead, but yeah, they made this movie, and the stars actually were taking money out of their own pocket to help promote the movie while it was in post-production, this interminable post-production period, because these are the guys who are the stars of a movie, and they know that this was potentially good for their careers, and they're doing what they can to promote it, even though it's fishy as fuck that they're having to pay for shit, like their own little quasi-press junk and stuff.
So the whole idea was basically just to be able to keep the intellectual property in his possession.
The production rights on the film,
So that's why this film was made, which is weird because I distinctly remember seeing an ad for this somewhere when I was younger.
They ran trailers in theaters, apparently, and they also, I think, had one on videos as well.
Maybe that's why. I remember seeing it because I remember seeing the thing and thinking, oh my God, that's so cool as a kid.
And they definitely had it in Wizard Magazine and some of the other, like, I'm sure Comic Scene had shit. And one of the big things they talk about in the Doom documentary is Chris Gore of Film Threat, which was a cool magazine. It never took off the way that they thought it might, but they did a cover feature on it, and he was on set for most of the production, reporting on the I think it only ran for like a month or so mm-hmm. he just stayed pretty much the whole time and reported on it.
And so I feel like I saw this movie. I remember earlier we were talking about it, and you said save it for the podcast, but I distinctly felt like I saw it somewhere, maybe one of the local channels, maybe late at night.
Nope.
Could have maybe a bootleg.
Bootleg is much more likely, yes, because nobody in legit broadcasting could run this, because officially this movie doesn't exist.
I just remember distinctly seeing it, because there's scenes in that when we rewatched it, which I did watch at least 90% of the film.
You made it about 30% through.
Bullshit. I saw all the way in. I saw Doom turn into Doom, and I saw when they landed. I thought they were going to be turned into the Fantastic Four when that fucking generator hit them, and it didn't. It just turned Doom into Doom, and then I did fall asleep during the space shuttle thing, so I don't really know how that happened. Yeah, so I don't know how they got out of the space shuttle.
Let's have Mr. Fix-It recap the movie. Mr. Fix-It, why don't you provide the recap of the movie, and we'll jump in when you lose the threat.
I did wake up whenever.
So how does the movie begin, sir?
So they're in class, and
Commandant
Lassard is writing on the board, and I'm like, okay, where's Punky Brewster, because she's popping up soon too. This is good. I'm good. I'm on.
This is the biggest name in the movie is Commandant Lassard.
Really?
Did you recognize anybody else?
Well, who was the guy that played Mole Man? That guy's familiar. He's a character actor. I've seen him in other things.
Nope. I think you recognize the face mold. That dude didn't do shit. Literally, I looked at IMDb, and the role is in his famous movies twice.
Really?
He's like, yes,
well, maybe he reminds me of another.
Isn't Sue Storm? Wasn't she in Xenoware?
Warrior Princess or some shit.
Well, I know the guy that played Johnny.
She apparently auditioned but didn't get a part. The lady who played Sue Storm, Rebecca Staub, the only thing that I knew her from is she was in the movie Love Potion Number 9.
I remember that.
With Tate Donovan.
Is that the one where they drink it and they can't? No, I'm thinking of the one with, what's her name?
Sandra Bullock. That's her one of her first movies, yes. She's also in the same movie, Tate Donovan.
Okay, so she takes the potion, she can't talk, but like,
they're both
dudes
nerds,
wanna, like, bang
and they manage to come up with something that basically an aphrodisiac that attracts everybody to them and it causes.
Saw that in the theater as well.
So she was the stuck up chick at the bar that wouldn't give Tate Donovan the time of day, and then he used the love potion and she's suddenly all over him. And that was like, I think her second, well, it's not her second big role because I think she did like a lot of Hallmark movies.
But
like
wait a minute, the actor that played Johnny, I've seen him in something else, right?
Yeah, I think
he was like in a lot of TV shows for some reason.
I think he might have been in something like Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead or some shit like that. He was in one of those type of movies.
Because I've seen him before, like time period. He was like,
he reminded me of the O face guy from Office
Space.
Oh, man.
Well, anyway.
He did some stuff when he was in his teens.
Lundberg fucked her.
Not a lot afterwards, though.
So then,
from the Doom documentary, unfortunately, we see that he did lose his hair, and that probably didn't help.
I know. Anyway, so I stayed up to there, and then Doom gets hit with the lightning ball.
Oh, wait a second. You just named fucking actors over here. Okay, they're in the classroom, and then what happened?
They're getting ready for some kind of cosmic wave or something.
Well, who else is there with them? Victor Von Doom, right?
Victor Von Doom, yeah. Okay. But I don't know that actor. I've never seen him before.
That's
either.
Robert Culp's kid. Robert Culp from I Spy. You know Robert Culp.
Insert cricket.
The Greatest American Hero. He was the CIA guy.
Yeah,
that's his kid.
There's something else he did.
Jake Culp is his name.
He would always play like FBI agents or CIA agents, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
That was kind of his bag.
Well, he was in I Spy and he kind of went there.
I want to say there was something else I saw.
I Spy featured on Bonding Agents. We got another show. I need to get another episode out of.
You want to hear one of our hosts and his father put together a sniper rifle? Let's do Bonding Agents.
It was like a 22. It's not a sniper rifle.
And you're on a list. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. There is a list. So they're waiting for this.
Also in the class with them. They're waiting on the celestial event called the Colossus, and they've devised a contraption that's supposed to, I think.
So let me ask you,
draw in the energy
since you're going to frank the shit out of us, this seems to me like I'm being frank. So let me just get it done.
I think we need to establish the characters.
Okay, hold on. So when they made this film, did they have rights to all of the Fantastic Four?
No.
They couldn't bring in like that's Galactus waving his hand over the earth.
They brought that up in the Doomed documentary.
See, I couldn't remember that part.
The intention was they were going to have Mole Man in the movie as one of the major villains. And for some reason, some arcane reason, they didn't have the rights to Mole Man. And it's like, what other Marvel property
did he appear in the first issue?
He's in the first fucking issue. Yeah, it makes no damn sense. So they invented a character called the Jeweler that sort of replaced him.
Oh, okay.
It was cheaper because they could have him in sewers rather than being actually underground. Instead of having to have moloids, they just had like homeless people. And he basically is like the Lord of the Homeless People. He's also like really into jewelry. Doesn't make a lot of sense. The makeup effects looks like it was like leftovers. Like maybe they had a mold from a Leprechaun movie or something, and they just like recycled it.
I love the fact that they kept calling it a diamond, and it's just quartz. So giant piece
just
of quartz,
gigantic.
And they're like, I can smell a diamond from 100 miles away. See, that's why I was paying attention. Yeah. And it's like, no, it's a piece of quartz.
Well, but you're kind
of
getting ahead. So,
dude, that's like literally right there. Go ahead.
No, they don't have the jewel yet. We're still in the fucking 10 years ago part.
Oh,
and don't forget the part where Reed and Ben go to the Storm House. Why are they living there? Right, they're students and they're living out of the house. That's why they know these kids.
I don't know why.
They were living there. I think they were like instead of being in a dorm, they were living at the Storm residence, and so they hang out with the kids there. 10 years from now, Reed's gonna want to bang one up. So
then they show
that's from the comics. That's fucking comics legit.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, they show the two comic relief Russian spies or Latvian spies.
Well, you're kind of getting ahead again.
No, they were there too. Yeah, they were in the very beginning. They're sitting at the table and they're playing chess. See, who was this? Oh, that's right. You were probably asleep at that point. My bad.
Oh, my God.
We'll see how long that fucking cockiness lasts.
Anyway.
Oh, no. I want him to continue telling us. Okay, so they're going to do the experiment where they harness the energy of the Colossus.
And it's some kind of like, it's going over, the whole class is out there and it's huge. Like, I would have figured those students should not have been out there because it looked like radiation was raining down on everybody.
It basically looks like the Aurora Borealis, but in like the Midwest or some shit.
Yeah. The device is speeding up.
I thought they were all going to turn to dust like a Night of the Comics.
Well, the device picks up this energy and it's running hot, and Reed is trying to shut it down, and Victor won't let him.
Reed didn't think the device was ready, and Victor was like, "No, we have to do this now." And
well, because they were arguing about the math, and like, you know, didn't he tell him like, "Don't correct my math," or it's right, and he said, "No, Victor, it's wrong."
And he's like, "It's your math. This is based on your math." He's like, "Well, let's run it again, but with the new, the updated figures." He's like, "No, there's no
time." Yeah. So the device gets supercharged. Victor gets hit by electric bolt, and he's pinned to the wall, and Ben Grimm is hanging out with some girl while they're watching this, and he somehow sprints across the fucking quad and arrives there and is able to, I guess, not...
Well, he realizes that the guys have done the thing they weren't supposed to do, and he's trying to save them from getting blown up. Particularly, though, it seems like he's trying to save Victor Von Doom.
Yeah.
Because Reed at least knows enough to get the fuck out of there. Victor's like, "I cannot fail!"
No, Reed falls back, and he keeps screaming, "I cannot fail," and then that's when he gets hit with the bolt, and he's like pinned against the wall, and he's getting electrocuted, and then Ben Grimm tackles him, which I figured he would have been electrocuted as well. They would have been both shocked, but apparently
he had muscles.
Yeah.
The muscles deflected the energy.
It was so he pulls him off. The device shuts down. He looks at Victor and he's like, gives him the nod of not going to make it. And then Reed gingerly gets up and says, "Well, I better go get some help." And then just kind of wanders off screen, which I thought was kind of weird.
By the way, Mac, any observations about Victor Von Doom in this movie so far?
Not much of an accent.
How about his relationship with Reed?
Oh, they seem
one-sided intimacy.
Yeah, maybe a little.
Man's
bit.
A little handsy.
He's very.
Does he caress Reed's face at any point?
I believe I believe you may be correct. There's a bit of strange caressing of his face.
I don't want to say strange, but I think that it's
tradition in this country. It's European. It's European.
Very.
There were some overt gestures that would make what would have potentially been subtext appear to be text. Is the way I would put that.
Yeah. Whatever one step above subtext is.
So
we think Victor loved Reed.
He's European. Both cheeks. Hey, Bazzano, you know, hey, that kind of love.
But carry on, Mr. Fitz. Tell us more about the movie.
Okay, so I fell asleep then at that point because I remember seeing that scene.
Well, you were talking about, okay, it jumps 10 years later.
Okay, I'll just tell you, I woke up. Wait, the hospital, right? No, wait. You asking me what I remember.
Well, okay, well, I think we're going to get Mac in here.
Okay.
So
okay, well, first, the two Latvian spy guys.
They grabbed
the medical dudes that take him out. They're
that part.
Very badly burned. He's very badly burned. He's not going to make it or whatever. And then they get in the elevator and they look at each other like, "Oh, we got him." And they bounce out.
The comic relief.
So Reed and Ben both think that Victor's dead. And there's a sweet scene of Ben holding Reed as he feels the full weight of the consequences of this experiment.
Right.
Then we jump 10 years later.
Okay. I don't remember that part. Next thing I know is Johnny's like, We survived.
Whoa. Yeah, that's a big jump.
I remember.
So, well, no, but you remember some of this because, okay, 10 years later, Reed is in the Baxter building. He's funded a spacecraft to approach the Colossus again. He asked Ben to be the pilot. They eventually go to get the Storms to help them because they wouldn't forgive them if they went out to space without them. By this point, the kids have grown up. Sue in particular is quite the little babe.
That's when she's coming down the stairs, right?
Yeah.
I remember that.
You guys can attest, I'm not a waspy kind of dude. I don't tend to like the blonde chicks and stuff. I don't know if it's the lipstick, the eye makeup, or what, but something about her, she looks tasty to me. I'm sorry.
That was a strange way to put
it. Yeah, I was going to say, from the blurred image of what we were watching, you got a lot out of that, man.
Maybe it's just the super low definition VHS quality is harkening to some old...
I got
to
think of that particular shade of lipstick from the 90s. You know, I like that bright red.
I mean, at that young of an age, you know, porn wasn't available. You know, it
was
always
I was not that young. In the 90s, I was not that young, so no.
Way back in 94 when you were 27 years old.
But while I'm thinking about it, since I forgot to mention this earlier, I know that I bought a bootleg copy VHS of Fantastic Four. I believe it was 96. The movie's supposed to be out in 94. Yeah. I was doing conventions. I don't know if it was for the first shop or the second shop. I think it was the first shop, if I remember correctly. So that pretty firmly puts it in 96. Bought it, watched it. A couple of years later, my partner's new husband, his favorite superhero was Ben Grimm, the Thing. And I'd watched the movie and I was like, okay, I've seen it. I don't know how many more times I'm going to watch it. I'm just going to give it to him since he's such a Thing fan. He'll probably get more joy than I did. And that was the last time I owned a copy of this
movie. So you gifted it to him?
I did give it to him, though, yeah.
At Christmas time?
No. Oh, okay. I wasn't that cheap. I wasn't quite that cheap.
I was going to say.
I was poor, but I wasn't quite that poor. we jump to 10 years. They're going to go into space. But one of the things that they need is the giant diamond. And
the quartz.
That part, yeah. And so they have to have this giant diamond to absorb the energy from the Colossus. And the jeweler guy decides he's going to do a comical, like, jumping across the laser
lasers.
Thing,
I remember that part.
Even though I think there's more like yarn. I don't think those were lasers. Zip tape or something. I don't know what the fuck that was supposed to be. But he jumps over the lasers and steals the quartz and puts another one in its place. And so when they go into space, they don't realize that they don't have the diamond that they need to absorb the shit, and they're going to get fucked up. Dr. Doom, meanwhile, and his little Latverian henchmen are watching this go on. They're like, ha ha ha, these guys are going to fucking die. I'm just going to let this play out.
And they're reporting back to Doom. I saw that
I can always steal,
yeah.
I can always steal this back from Jewel.
You got to give, costume did look kind of cool.
Dr. Doom?
Yeah. I mean, they were loyal to the image of Doom.
With the exception of the jeweler, I think everybody was pretty comic accurate.
Yeah.
Sometimes low rent, but definitely
No, absolutely low rent, but Doom looked like Doom. Yeah. I mean, they didn't do this new shit where he had like this fake mask or like all this goofy weird shit where he's like in the Man in the Iron Helmet bullshit. It was like he looked like he was in a giant Iron Man suit.
And they did a lot of classic Doctor Doom imagery, like where you're only seeing his eye through the slit of his mask with the shadows on either side. I'm like, that's straight out of like a Burn Fantastic Four issue. Or later on, the way he would wear his cloak, his cape.
And a green one too.
Yeah. But the way he would like cover himself in it so you just see like his head and everything. Like, I was like, man, this is just straight out of a comic.
Jake Cope was doing some good cape work, and he was doing a lot of hand work.
Oh, the hand work.
Because he couldn't do any gestures with the mouth. Crazy. He was doing everything with his hands. Yes.
He was communicating feelings through his fingers. Yeah.
And they would do a little sound effect. Of his fingers whenever they were supposed to be clanking around and everything. It was obnoxious.
Well, yeah. Well, I understand he was some sort of a vacuum seal, and he literally was clanking around a lot of the time in this scene. I'm not sure how
much
that was.
We skipped a scene I wanted to talk about. And that's when they go into this vault where the diamond is, and Ben Grimm runs to a blind woman.
And he knocks
Alicia Masters, shatters her statues, and he does this weird, like, I'll help you, and then, like, lifts her up into the air and then slowly brings her down, and her hands go on his face.
Well, she's very upset about the bus getting destroyed, and she's kind of freaked out about a 6'4" muscular man lifting her in the fucking air.
It was very just really bizarre the way it went down. It was super weird.
Kind of salty.
And then he was all like, I'm in love with her, and they run upstairs.
Oh, yeah, Reed's like, calm down. Like, yeah, calm down. He's like,
after he's popped a boner over the fucking 11-year-old he used to room with.
It was just when he picks her up into the air and then just slowly sets her down in her hands.
Should we take a moment to acknowledge that the stage actress who played Alicia Masters is terrible? She's just a terrible actor.
Really bad.
Really, really bad.
The bar was set pretty low, man, from this movie. I mean, we're not having no Al Pacino.
She had like eight lines in the whole
Michelle
movie.
Pfeiffer. Right? I mean,
most of them are
really
screaming
low.
Or crying. Yeah, but yeah, really, really bad.
We're talking like Catwoman acting here. That level of acting. Or worse.
Regardless of your feelings about the other actors, I think she's below their par.
Really?
I think so, yes.
So below
bar? I think what she did pretty well is she did do the blind thing okay, where you got a sense of her not.
You okay? What the fuck? Oh my God, dude.
She did a good job of staring at the middle distance and feeling shit with her hands.
Yeah, she made very little eye contact,
yeah,
which is really key.
But beyond that, like line delivery and stuff like that, I was like, no, this is particularly bad.
Although later on, I think she does make eye contact.
Really? Oh, does she? Okay.
Yeah,
I think she does.
So, okay, so y'all have
but that covers the favorite scenes.
Okay, so now y'all have to explain to me what happened next, because the next thing I know, I wake up and Johnny's excited that they survived, and Reed picks up a piece of metal and says, isn't it strange that the ship's in 1,000 pieces? And we're okay. And Johnny's just beating off.
So you
and
keep
he sneezes.
That's
Bush gets.
Fairly fucking. Yeah, that's fairly fucking accurate, though.
So basically,
a good call on Reed's part. Smart guy.
They take the ship into space.
Did the ship look like a ship? I just want to know.
Actually, I thought the ship looked pretty cool.
It was decent looking. Yeah,
that's part. Yes,
it didn't look like it. Well, it was funny because they made use of stock footage a lot. Like I actually liked all the science shit they had at the beginning over the credits. It was all
opening credits are great. Opening credits,
and they also show rocket boosters and a ship. In flight, that's clearly a standard rocket, but the actual design is more like a Christmas ornament kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of there's a little bit of dissonance there because like I didn't see those boosters.
I didn't see the boosters.
Model was taking off, but I'm seeing them now.
It's because it was like NASA stock footage that they were splicing in.
Yeah, but generally it looked pretty good.
I thought it flying in space looked cool. I thought the Colossus wave coming through looked fine.
Yeah,
It's maybe more like 1984, not 1994, but it still looked pretty cool. Basically, when they're harnessing the energy, it's supposed to hit that diamond and cool off and said the diamonds are fake, so the fucking ship blows up, they fall, and then that's when I woke up.
And Johnny's like, achoo! And then the bush catches on fire, and they're like, what did you do? And I'm like, is it going to speak? The bush is going to burn, and bush going to talk? And then they're like, Sue! And she's like, I'm over here, because you can't see her, because she's the Holy Ghost, and apparently they can't see her, and then she appears halfway, and she's missing her legs, and then she falls back, and then Reed does this really creepy, like...
Well, it's like they're this... empty field. Yeah, with like a couple of burning
pieces.
There's no ship. But she's managing to fall backwards in the only bit of jagged shrapnel in this entire field. So it's a good thing Reed's there.
Yeah, and he does the... And then it literally looks like a broom handle with a glove at the end. It's been stretched out. And it catches her, and then you...
I think it's great that the space suit, they had the telescoped in that way. Yeah. So we're going to see a fair bit of that over the course of this.
And then he stretches, picks her, and brings her in. And Ben Grimm was still Ben Grimm, so that was...
Yeah, he just stayed Ben Grimm for a while there. It didn't really make sense. It would make more sense he's already Rocky because that's how he survived the crash.
I thought the reason he was going to mutate was because when he had grabbed Victor, he'd already been exposed once. So then this would be like a double exposure for him. So he would...
Secondary mutations, maybe the
first time he maybe did have a power, but he didn't realize it. And then this one just mutated even further. So that's why his mutation was different than the rest of theirs.
I thought it was going to have to do with the Alicia Masters sculpture. But because I was like, oh, they're about to go to the spaceship. He knocks her sculpture over. It's all broken. I thought like he was going to have it with him, and that's was going to end that.
And he would absorb the stone or something,
like that. And totally not. I was like, oh, I see where they're going with this. No,
completely fucked with the chronology. But let's point out the scene where the jeweler stole the diamond specifically to give to the blind girl who, as best I can tell,
was kidnapped.
Didn't know he existed. So why did he feel the need to get this giant diamond for her? That was the impression I was under. And then later on, she receives face molds because apparently you have to take a face mold in order to fit the helmet for the astronauts, and so she's feeling the face mold, and that's how she recognizes Ben Grimm and realizes he died in the space shuttle, that the guy that she instantly fell in love with and vice versa in a hallway meeting that lasts 20 seconds, she's now like distraught over his death that she only realized because she happens to be the artist who's going to get face mold so that she can craft a statue in their honor, even though it's literally been like 24 hours since they went up into space. And then she immediately gets kidnapped by the jeweler. So there's a lot of coincidences in this script. I think because, you know, they had no money and they had
to... I was going to say, it's cheaper to film it.
Wow, that's really, like, incredulous when shit like that's going on.
The military shows up and they're like, hey, we're... Well, I know. The military, wink, wink, shows up and they're like, hey, we're going to take you guys back and figure out what's wrong with you. And they're like, all right, cool. And then out of nowhere, they're like, oh my God. And it's because the thing has now rocked out or whatever. He's gotten rock hard.
For no reason, no provocation.
Yeah, it's like super rock hard, like fully rock hard. And he comes over and they're like about to shoot him. They're like, this is my friend. He's coming with us. So then they go back and they're being experimented on by some doctor. And he was all like, so, I would draw blood from you, but I don't know how I would do it. And then the thing goes to sit down in a chair and the chair breaks and he falls down. And we're like, yuck, yuck, yuck.
I saw that part. And then the Sue...
Well, no, Johnny's next, I think.
Was it Johnny?
Because he flame ons.
Yeah, now we figured out how it comes on, don't we, Doc? Because he's trying to create his flame.
Well, he asked him, how does your powers work? Yeah, well, I just like look at a part of my body, part of my body, and I'm just sort of like thinking, like, flame on. And then, flame on. It's like,
at least we figured it out now, Doc. Word. Yeah. And then Sue...
Which I don't see how that would interfere with the drawing of blood, though.
I know. He goes to the draw
maybe
Sue's
maybe
blood.
Maybe the needles would melt?
No, she was like, do you turn into flames? And he was like, no. Are you Rocky or something like that? She's like, no. And then he goes to take her blood and she disappears and then pops up behind him and goes, boo, and scares the shit.
Ooh, and he sticks himself.
And he stabs himself. And then he goes to Reed. And was he like far She's away?
Just, he just tosses
And he was like, do you mind taking your own blood? And then he goes, and he stretches and takes it, and he pulls it back. And we all laughed because it was great.
And terrible.
By far, my favorite effect of this entire movie was anytime Reed did it.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Because they would do that weird thing where he's really far away and they're just like,
well, and then it's like,
it out in your
direction, like they attach
3D almost.
Whatever he grabs, they would attach the camera to. So when it's coming back to him, they're like, it's with that horrible.
Don't look at the middle space. That just look at the two ends.
The horrible rubbery sound effect.
And so I remember that part.
Well, and then he reports to Dr. Doom because it's all a sham and Doom is the one who's collected them so he can study them in hopes of accumulating their powers and taking them into himself, which makes no fucking sense at all.
Okay, and then this part is where Max says, hey man, stay up. There's like 30 minutes left. And I'm like, okay. And then that's it.
That's actually true. That's an accurate representation of what happened there.
So the jewelers, the Librarian guys were going to be like, hey, we want
the
diamond.
They
want to
buy it and he won't sell it.
Right.
Yeah.
So then Doom's like, I'll have have to go get it myself.
Didn't he do like something with his fingers too?
Oh, all the time.
Like needles or some shit?
No, that was
later.
Oh, okay, I remember that part. I thought it was that scene.
And the Fantastic Four get sick of being cooped up, and
which they did in the other movie, in the remakes.
There was a lot of similarities between this movie and the Trank remake. One, dude.
Because they did. They, well, not just the Trank one.
The Tim Story one.
The Tim Story one. Yeah.
I never saw this.
Oh, you never saw the Tim Story, because they do that whole joke about like do the little montage of them with their powers and kind of like ooh. So I was kind of like, I've seen this.
Yeah. And later on when they get trapped by Dr. Doom, the ray hitting them all and stuff. It's there's
some similarities.
The influence is there. Yeah. So they decide they don't want to be cooped up anymore. They knock out some scientists. They explore. They realize that what's going on and set off alarms. And that's when thing shows up and they end up facing Dr. Doom. Says it's clobbering time. Well, first of several instances of that occurring.
A lot of times for a very short film.
It is indeed clobbered. And then they ran out and they went back to the Baxter Building and started going on about their lives from there for a little bit.
They got costumes and shit like that.
I think that's actually when we cut to the jeweler part, because there's like all the interstitial shit.
Did Stanley make an appearance as the mailman?
No, he did not. Despite appearing on set a few times.
Missed opportunity.
I'm not confident.
Could have linked this to everything.
I'm not at all confident he would see it that way.
You think he knew? He knew from...
Oh, here. I got a Stanley quote from you about this movie. You want to hear it?
Really?
I was going to put it in, but we'll do it right now.
Nice segue.
Stan says...
Did the check clear?
They did unearth footage of a comic book convention in 1993 where Lee said, I'm not expecting too much of it. It was the last movie to be made that we had no control over. Our lawyers basically gave the rights away. Speaking to Kevin Smith years later, Lee stated the movie was never intended to be released, but the cast and crew didn't know about it. He believed it was only made by the studio so they wouldn't lose rights to the franchise. So no, I don't think he was particularly thrilled with the
film. Well, not just that. He showed up at their awful, literally condemned studio where they're rats running around and stuff. He brought donuts at least one of the days. He was real nice to everybody, and so they're very hurt when he turns around and talks shit about the production like that. But no, he does not appear, and let's face it, Stan Lee was a cameo whore, the biggest cameo whore, infamously so. So the fact that he chose not to appear in this movie was very telling.
I think it's...
Apparently that was back in the day, probably back in the days of Joey Calamari or whatever that guy Jim Shearer was talking about in Dallas that time, where they were just running around selling the rights to anybody. And so this German producer guy pays him $250,000 in 1983, and that's where the whole 10 or 11 year timeline comes from to have gotten the rights. But they didn't want them to have the rights anymore, because it's after the Batman movie. There's an expectation you could actually do something with the Fantastic Four in the future, and they didn't want to.
God, wait a second. The fact that you just put that into this context, that Batman came out in 89, this movie came out, produced maybe 3 or 4, I mean, 89, it was probably produced in 87, 88. Mm-hmm. This came out in 94.
Roughly,
Like I said.
Or did not come out in 94.
It keeps hitting me in my brain that this was 84, not 94. And I have to remember, this came out after Batman 89, and Batman looked so good.
Well, but this movie was made for $1 million. Supposedly, that's one of the counting things they do in the movie Doomed, is that it was supposed to be like $1.5 million, I think, because I think the producer was supposed to put up $750,000, and Corman was supposed to put up $750,000, but Corman added and services, and basically, the argument of the documentary was that he nickel and dimed them so that he didn't actually put much money into it. And it's funny because he contributes to the documentary, and he went to the premiere of the documentary, and apparently a half hour into the documentary he walked out with no explanation and never talked to them again. So I think that maybe pointing that out was not something that sat well with Roger Corman.
Probably should have saved that for the end.
Probably should, yeah.
So what happened after that?
Well, just kind of cut to the chase, is Alicia Masters was kidnapped by the jeweler. She gets kidnapped by Dr. Doom because the jeweler goes away and we don't worry about him ever again. Thing, of course, leaves the Fantastic Four for a period of time because he's not wanting to be a celebrity. He's not wanting any more of Reed's missions. But when he hits the streets, everybody is scared of him and rejects him. That's how he ends up hanging out with the jeweler. And Reed connects with Alicia Masters. And then he joins the Fantastic Four in going to rescue Alicia and stop Dr. Doom from creating a death ray, which I don't even know why that was happening. Maybe I dozed off in that part. Mac, do you know why he was creating a death ray to destroy a city? Doom?
No, I don't think Doom. Was it ever really?
I don't think so. I don't think elaborate that. At this point, we're kind of like barreling out. Oh, let's not forget the part, again, replicating the Tim Story movie, where even though in the comics, their costumes are made out of unstable molecules to adapt to their superpowers and are therefore created by their super scientist, Reed Richards, in the movies, they're always designed by Sue Storm because uterus. You know, she's always the one who designs her suits. They're wearing stitched together, like she's fucking Aunt May or some shit. They're just wearing stitched together uniforms. uniforms. Not particularly well stitched, as you may have noticed too, where like the fours were in the wrong places sometimes.
Oh, we have to say that like her, was it her mom? They gave them the name when they were all about to leave in the Rockies.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and they all got together.
Look at you guys. The Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And then so then after she makes, they're like, why is there four on these things? And she's like, we're the Fantastic Four, remember?
But I have to get into creep a little bit. In both the Tim story and the 94 movies, I really like the costumes on Invisible Girl. I really enjoy those costumes.
You know what? Look, the dude that played Reed was pretty yoked up too.
Yeah, he looked good actually. I think there's equal time there.
Yeah, I was like, okay, this guy is he's not as big as the guy who played Ben Grimm, but he was
well. That dude was pretty gigantic. Good shape. That dude was muscled out, but he was in great shape. He was definitely equal time, undercover like stud. So like, just... like Cheedy and fucking Good Place or some shit. Where it's like, wait, Reed's kind of got a bod.
Okay, so let's wrap it up. He said he's going to fire the Ray off, right?
Right.
He traps the Fantastic Four. Go there to stop him. They all get trapped because like this is too easy. This is a trap. They all get stuck on these like tractor beam things. And then Reed wiggles his toe out of his, and then stretches his foot up and out and kicks the projector thing on them. And then to free themselves, Doom fires the laser at New York. Johnny flies, turns his body into flame, and then flame on.
Horrible CG.
It surpassed my expectations. Really? I was like, oh, this dude is not going to do anything more than just get his hand on fire and
they're
shoot,
gonna, like, shoot fire. A rocket and you can see the flame shoot out and
but he like no. full on turns into the Human Torch and flies to intercept the beam, which
it was at least PS1 quality animation. Yes.
I'll go with that.
Cutscene, not gameplay.
Maybe a little bit. Okay, so then they beat. What do they do to Doom? Why am I spacing out on what they did?
Because it's easy to forget. Because Reed confronts Doom. Doom pulls a Freddy Krueger and pops claws.
Yeah. I remember that part.
He does nothing with. And then Reed proceeds to punch him repeatedly in the face. You know, the iron covered like armored face, and just punches him repeatedly until he falls off the side of a building. Not unlike Jack Nicholson in the first Batman movie, because it's cheap to have a guy just sort of hanging off the side of a building or a castle.
Yeah, was like holding his hand and then
he's holding the gauntlet because Doom's like, save me, Reed, we used to be friends. And then as soon as Reed grabs him by the hand, he's like, fuck you, bitch, I'm gonna keep fucking with you.
And then he falls off.
Well, the gauntlet falls off, so it's not Reed isn't culpable in this guy's death, even though he could probably like stretch
he
around
could've. Yeah, no, he could have absolutely
stretch around his crotch,
dude, and he would have like wrapped him in like a
that was a Superman and Superman v Batman Dawn of Justice where he lets the whole courtroom blow up and was like, I probably could have done something about that, but it's like I didn't want to or some shit like that, where you're like, I think Reed probably had a couple other ways he could have gone and didn't really try.
I would argue that it's maybe closer to Superman 2 where they just sort of fall into the pit and he's like,
oh yeah, yeah, where he, oh, where, shucks. What's his name, the big one in Superman 2?
Nog.
Where Nog goes and then he falls forward and you know he fell to his death, like he smashed the ground, his body was broken and Superman watched it happen.
Yeah, so when,
that movie's so metal now.
When did that movie come out? When did Superman 2 come out?
81?
Yeah, like
82.
I'm telling you, this is so 84 level.
They spent a lot of money on it.
Well, yeah, remember the whole big thing about that. We saw some Superman. They said you would believe a man could fly. That was a big selling point for the Superman movies, like to make it look like he actually flew.
Oh, speaking of, doesn't Johnny Storm drop in one of these lines? He's like, something, something, Batman, or holy something, Batman. Yeah, and yeah, I was like, what the fuck? Yeah. Like, did you
crossing the stream.
Drop dude. A bat, like, holy. I understand Batman
he
would
did,
be a.
Well, he did a Robin reference specifically.
Right,
so,
all right.
So,
holy something.
So we're assuming they read comic books. So DC is just a comic book in their world.
Or the Batman TV show is a TV show in the Marvel Universe, no. Which just caused me to implode and explode for a moment while I was
explosivo.
Like, what is going on?
And then, that was audible. I definitely heard it when that happened.
Yeah. So then they beat Doom. Doom falls to his death. And then they flash to Johnny Storm flying to New York to intercept this laser beam. And then it like hits him like a fire hydrant. Like if you walked onto
the game was glitching for a moment there.
Yeah. And then he like hits it and it goes away.
Well, no, he created like a supernova blast, which is funny because earlier on he's like trying, he like focuses all his flame for like 5 minutes straight and he can't burn a hole in the wall and then just blast right through it, but now all of a sudden he can like stop the death ray. But it was fine. It we wanted to see the Human Torch in action. We didn't get the Human Torch in action, looking suspiciously smooth and awful lot like Silver Surfer, but still works fine. It was fine.
Maybe not fine, but it happened.
Yeah.
You know what, I just a quick side note. Yeah. I've always bothered me is when Johnny Storm turns into the Torch, he is always, he has the humanoid form with just the little flames coming off.
The lines.
Then, yeah, the lines. Like the, but then when you see the human torch, and it's literally just a man on fire. Like, you see a humanoid shape, but there's like this huge flame. Why isn't Johnny ever like that? Is Johnny some kind of special fire?
It's just the way he's been drawn, man.
Really? Well, I
mean, why is Ben Grimm orange
I
saw, rock?
I someone know. Showed me the, I went to a friend's house, and he has the comic book posters, like artwork, and he has one with the human torch, and I thought it's a great looking image where he's like running, and it looks, you see the human form running, but it's like just an open flame on him.
You thought the cover of Marvel Timely number one?
I think something like that. Yeah, Marvel, I think that was the cover. But I was like, well, I mean, that looks
great. That was the distinction between the Golden Age and Silver Age human torch. The Golden Age just looked like a flame, like a humanoid flame, where Johnny was red and orange and had all the dash, all the lines.
Okay.
And so it always bugged me. Same thing with Dormammu, where they don't draw the lines because he's supposed to have the lines. I don't know. I know they have to interpret that for other media, but it's like...
It never without the lines, it doesn't feel right.
Yeah. That's actually one of the things I liked about the Josh Trank movie, was where they would show him talking, and he'd kind of have he had a more humanoid shape to him. He wasn't just flames. I like that about, but that was one thing I thought they did a nice job with.
I saw that photo, supposedly the Zemo costume for the
Falcon Winter Soldier.
And I see him, and it just looks like a ski cap. And I'm like, I hope it has to have the lines.
I think it had the lines.
Did it?
If you're seeing the same image I had, I was happy with what I saw, but it was not like high res or anything.
So. The one I saw wasn't high res. I didn't see the lines.
I went through an entire movie where he didn't even put on a fucking mask. Yeah. So I'll take your crumb. Give me a pinkish mask, and you got me, okay? I want my Zemo. Okay, that was a tangent.
Okay, so that's the movie.
Yeah.
Well, except for the wedding at the end.
All right. Where she's in a wedding dress and the rest of them are in their Fantastic Four costume.
It'd be kind of cool if she had like a blue dress with also like blue.
I'm pretty sure the budget was depleted by then.
The actress in the documentary notes that any scene where she's not wearing the Fantastic Four outfit, she's wearing her own clothes.
So that was her own.
Maybe that was her own wedding dress for all I know. Yeah.
Probably was. So then they get in the limousine to leave and the sunroof opens.
God,
and
Reed's
arm stretches out the top. And it's totally, like you said, it's a fucking
broomstick
with a glove on the end, and they're just shaking it back and forth.
I think it was a big rubber thing with like a crank, and so they're just like cranking.
Yeah,
so
that's
like
what it was.
Wags back and forth.
Yeah. And it just for too long, and they cut back to the crowd.
It's unintentionally funny.
And they cut back to the car, and he's still doing it as he just drives down the fucking street. It's like, incredible.
And then cue music.
No, fantastic.
And I have to say, I want to say this: whoever was involved with the music took like $6,000 of their own money and paid a 40-piece orchestra to do the song. The song, there's like two songs basically, and they play those same two songs throughout the movie. But I really like that song. I like the
it's fantastic. Like I said, I kept saying it's familiar to me. Like I was like, it reminds me of Jurassic Park.
No, that was that song. That was three songs, because they had the mellow music, and I think that's the one you said you thought was from Jurassic Park, which clearly wasn't.
Like,
they had the main themes, which was the more that and then they had that stupid Peter and the Wolf thing that they would play every now and again, the whimsical doo-doo-doo-doo, and then they would have the menacing music. So they had four songs.
I just came up with a new podcast,
but I'm pretty sure one of them is Peter the Wolf.
I want Frank to do music he just did right now to a movie. We watch the movie,
I'm,
he's like
Cardi B of soundtrack.
That was amazing. He's like, and this song was.
But okay, did you guys do that though when you were in school and like elementary school and you had music class and they played that fucking Peter and the Wolf shit? Yeah. Am I wrong? I know it's from that score.
Yeah,
you know? Is that in public domain?
That's a good point.
I don't think so. Maybe it is.
Maybe. I mean, because Disney didn't have a tendency.
I think it was just a fucking.
Well, Disney had a tendency to just take old music that was in public domain and just animate.
Well, they did classical music, but see, it's tricky because you still have masters. So it's like, just because you hear a song and it's a song that was composed before copyright, the performance is still under copyright. The master is still under copyright.
You just got to write it. You just got to perform it yourself.
Because like Phantasm, wasn't that? There's a lot of like very memorable music in that one. I was thinking of the demon.
I love that Disney music movie where the silver balls fly around and lodge into people's heads.
Phantasm?
Yeah, Phantasm.
What's the Disney one? Yeah, fuck you then. Yeah, I think it is called Phantasm.
It's not Phantasm. Phantasm's the one with the ball.
Mac. Compute.
Internet, save us.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The Mickey Mouse is...
Like the demon, the bald mountain, and all that kind of bullshit. And Mickey's Sorcerer's Apprentice. He's got the
Fantasia.
Fantasia. My bad.
I'm not a Walt Disney guy, clearly.
I can see. Disney Plus is wasted on you.
It is. Tangent. Disney Plus fucking sucks.
Oh, my God.
It's a little fucking ass. Like, hey, we're going to have Adventures of Babysitting in like June 2020. Wait, can you wait for it? He's like, I can fucking pull that shit up on cable on demand. What the fuck are you guys doing? doing Disney. Fucking shit.
Please stop tangenting. Nobody wants to hear about Disney Plus. We're talking about fucking 1994 Fantastic Four.
Actually, I think they probably want to hear more about Disney
Plus. Okay, so we talked about the music. Do we want to... Let's talk about...
I really like the theme song, and I've actually been using it lately on the Marvel Handbook. Available now on your podcatcher.
I think that the special effects, for the most part, like Reed was really shitty.
Yeah, hilariously. Especially,
hilariously shitty.
Stretchy leg was a thing here. They really got to use a lot of... And I love how no matter what he's wearing, it still stretches.
But I thought the thing was great.
I thought it looked
thing
especially
was fucking awesome.
Especially when his face would move. I thought that looked great.
That was totally Ninja Turtle quality animatronics in his face.
Yeah, same technology.
Absolutely. And I thought it looked really, really good.
Well, was there somebody in the suit or was it a robot?
No, that was a body suit on him.
That was actually one of the interesting things is the guy who was cast to play Ben Grimm did not play the thing. Because they had to work on the suit before they had everything else in the movie together. And so they had a stuntman cast who did the vocals as well. He's interviewed extensively in the Doom documentary. But he's like, I don't know, several inches shorter.
He's definitely shorter. Yeah.
And so he's a smaller guy. But I thought they both did a good job. I would argue that the guy in the suit probably did a little better job because one problem I did have with Ben is he didn't have the accent. And it's not Ben Grimm if he doesn't have a New York accent.
Yancey Street.
With his baby blue eyes.
It's not quite the way that goes. But
how's it go? Aunt Petunia or some shit like that?
Aunt Petunia?
The ever-loving blue-eyed thing is the way it goes. Yeah. But no, he looked fucking fantastic. And I understand that was a horrible ordeal for the actor because he was very enthusiastic, but he's pouring the sweat out of his boot every night.
Ugh.
There's no cold suit. Like, usually when you're doing that kind of work, you'll have like some kind of a cold
suit. Yeah, they'll have like a hose that blows cold.
Not him. No, he just suffered through that fucking shit. The good thing, though, is it didn't take long to put on. It was one of those like 4-hour things. He like took about 40 minutes to get him into the thing.
Oh, nice.
So that's a huge plus. But yeah, I thought it looked great. Aside from the black around the eyes was a little too thick. They kind of probably should have had a latex piece in there.
Yeah.
But yeah, the animatronics and just the whole movie has a lot of fidelity to the comic. I think that's part of where a lot of the affection comes from is that they keep fucking up the Fantastic Four by deciding to movie-fy it, you know? And while this movie is very 90s, while also simultaneously being very mid-80s, I did love that they look like the characters are supposed to represent. And Thing especially, I love when he says it's clobbering time, the four times he says that shit. It's fun. He has so much expressiveness in his face. The animatronics are fantastic.
Really, really good. I thought Doom looked really good.
I just said that.
I know you did. I'm agreeing with you.
It is high grade cosplay.
For
it's
sure.
Yes,
quality.
Yes.
And they didn't light it as well as they could have. Like the jeweler did a good job of lighting him so that he looked better.
He did have like a jeweler's eye, right?
Yeah.
So can I just say,
the jeweler didn't need to be in any of this.
Of course
bullshit.
Not. No. Oh, no. They could have taken him out entirely.
Completely.
But it's already only like an hour and 20 some odd minutes anyway. So I think they needed him just for
some padding.
They probably had the mold, and so they figured, you know, get some use out of it.
Well, but they gotta somehow get the diamond to be swapped.
They really don't. I really don't think Dr. Doom is.
He was going to get it. I'm like, well, this dude.
Another guy do it. And is like, hey, good job, guy. I don't need to fucking worry about this shit anymore.
That's a quote from the movie. I just don't understand why he was in it at all. Yeah, that was the problem. They really needed to have dubbed his voice. They should have gone full on Vader.
Well, it wasn't even the actor's fault. He said they actually had him put like a bucket on his head or some shit, and he's like, I don't think this is going to work the way you think it's going to work. And one of the things he keeps bringing up in the doc is that he just wants to go in there and do ADR on that. Please let him do the ADR so that you can understand the dialogue that's coming out of his mask.
And they didn't. Very difficult to understand him, especially
at times.
But I will say, look, so we're watching it on YouTube, so the quality sucks.
No legal act. That's one of the things that, speaking of Disney Plus, I had heard a rumor that they were actually going to have this available on Disney Plus. Totally a fucking bullshit rumor. Yeah.
I thought the sound was pretty good.
I wonder if somebody went in there and like remastered it somehow.
Yeah, I don't know. Like the score in the beginning, the opening credits, which like we both agree looked really, really good. The score was like incredible in here. And I was like, what the fuck? The sound did not match how terrible the video quality was. It was really, really bizarre.
I wonder if they had some kind of access.
That means there's no excuse for how bad Doom sounded is what I mean. Everything else sounded so good, even though it's a shitty uploaded to YouTube.
As a person who has an edit podcast, I can tell you that if the audio is too raw, there's only so much you can do to peak it up. So they might have been able to like tighten up the vocals. They might have been able to go out and levelate the fucking movie or some shit. But if you go through it, we're going to go so much with it. As you can hear from some of our podcasts where I've tried to fix it, and it still sounds like trash, including a future episode of the Marvel Handbook available on your podcatcher. The way this worked is the director took the movie, and while he was working on other stuff, like other commercial projects, he would be continuing to edit it for like months afterwards in his spare time, essentially, when he'd take a reel off that he's being paid for and put this reel on to work on it. At some some point, he was told he needed to turn over his master. And that was Avi Arad buying the movie back. Arad claims that he burnt it. They don't believe that because they don't believe that anybody who loves cinema would do that. I'm not so sure because so many people at Marvel hate this movie so much and don't see it as a legitimate movie that I could actually see that he might have destroyed the master, especially since nobody's been able to turn this thing up in the years since. But thankfully, what happened is the director ran off a few VHS copies at a professional recording place, and some of the higher quality versions of it that were seen in the documentary were taken from his versions. But apparently his thinking is he made like a couple of three copies for himself, and he thinks that whoever ran the copies off of it made a copy for themselves, and then once the movie was never released, they were the ones who were responsible for distributing that. And he was thankful that happened because I think he no longer had his copy, supposedly. So, you know, the only way this movie is out in the world is on VHS, and there may not be any better quality than what we've seen.
Mm-hmm. So just bootleg after bootleg after bootleg after.
Well, I mean, I'm sure, and a lot of times it's like 10th generation VHS copies. So, you know, I know mine was fuzzy as fucking 96. This one I think was about as bad or worse that we saw on YouTube.
Because I want to, man, I remember seeing this movie, but I just can't remember where.
Would you guys like me to read some more interesting facts about
sure,
this film?
Sure.
Did you know that Mark Ruffalo auditioned to be Dr. Doom?
Oh, well, I didn't know what role, but I knew that he auditioned.
Dr. Doom.
Renee O'Connor from Xena auditioned as well. Ruffalo could not have pulled off Doom. Fine actor, but Doom, no.
He mentioned this when the director was happy it got bootlegged. It went into production 3 days before the deadline, which would have turned the rights back over to Marvel. $250,000 for the rights. You mentioned that one already. Bernd Eigner refused to admit it was a ruse. He went to his grave saying that the movie was legit and it was intended to be released in theaters.
Except that he did, I think, confess to the director at one point.
The script was written in 3 weeks, which is not a long time.
Yeah, they didn't get the screenwriter for the documentary because he was literally a gun for hire, and he's like, I would love to contribute to your documentary, but I've really got nothing to say. I wrote it. It went out. I got no stories, you know. They paid me, you know.
Avi Arad bought the rights to the film and destroyed most of the copies of it.
And not that expensively either. They supposedly put $1 million in the movie, although apparently a lot of the people involved, this is the reason why it's fucked up. Watching the doc, all these people are like, how could you do this? It's like some kind of monumental crime, this horrible scheme. It's like, you guys did get paid something. I'm probably a pittance, but you did get paid something. There's no moral obligation to release the movie just because you put your heart and soul into it. But the one thing I would say, well, maybe they do have some obligation, is a lot of these guys took money out of their own pocket to get this movie made, to kind of push it over the line because they believed in the material and they believed that what it could do for them, for their careers and everything.
I wonder if they were telling them, you've seen Superman, you've seen Batman, come on, this is right at par, in par with them. We can do this.
Patrick Warburton auditioned to play Ben Grimm.
They mentioned that. That's right. Yeah. I forgot about that, though.
And Rebecca Stabb is a former Miss Nebraska. That's it. The rest of these we've all mentioned, so we're good.
Yeah.
I think we're covered. Most of those sucked. I apologize.
So what did you think of Mr. Fantastic?
The actor?
Yeah.
I thought he was okay. I think everybody was very TV movie level actor. I didn't actively hate any of them.
The movie itself was like a really good TV movie.
Yeah.
You know, not even really straight to video, although they are going to be made. But I think it was high of quality to where it could have been broadcast on a network. And I don't think I think it's maybe too high of a quality to be direct to video.
Well, it's definitely in there with the trauma films. It's trauma film level.
No, it's higher quality.
You think
trauma.
So?
The Corman, I hate to split hairs, but I think Corman is kind of a cut above on trauma. And also, trauma is just too heavy into exploitation elements, too much gross out stuff and nudity and stuff. I think that this could have been a pretty good movie of the week on. I mean, I think it's better than something like Generation X, for instance. Yes.
Hold your tongue, sir.
I'm not sure if it's quite ABC, NBC, CBS. Maybe, though. I don't know. Maybe, no.
It's for 39-20. Like 39-20, man.
I don't even think in 94. When was the Incredible Hulk
Fox WB.
When was Hulk Thor and Hulk Daredevil?
That was like 89, I think.
Okay, so I guess that wasn't too far beyond that. This feels like 88 on ABC at night or something like that. So, this could have been an ABC primetime event in the late 80s. Yeah. By 94, I think the bar was a little bit higher.
So the actor's name is Alex Hyde White. I thought he did a really nice job. He's got a nice, smooth tones, and he, not unlike Miles Teller and Niagara Falls, everybody who seems to play Mr. Fantastic really takes to the character and really wants to do more with them than they're usually given the opportunity to. He really wanted to dig back into this character again. He worked more than most of the people, to be honest, and he still harkens back to this character, and I think it's probably maybe the only time he's had a lead role too. I'm not sure, but I thought he did a nice job aside from the really terrible white they put into his hair.
Yeah, that was bad,
obviously, from like a Halloween, and it was totally
unnecessary.
Honestly, we could have probably done without highlighting the age difference between him and Sue because it kind of grody.
Yeah, that was weird.
I really wasn't too... I thought that the guy, Jay Underwood, who played Human Torch, was okay. But I would argue that Chris Evans was a better Human Torch. I remember that him being the highlight of
for
the movie.
For sure. Yeah. This guy was a little annoying and...
He was a little broader.
He was a little hacky, a little hokey, kind of sort of like a... He was not great. He was probably... I think he was the worst of the four Fantastic Four.
I would think that's
He was probably worse than Doom. He was better than Alicia Masters. The jeweler was just sort of there.
I think the jeweler was fine. He was kind of like doing a Billy Barty impersonation, but sure. Otherwise, you know, he did an okay job.
I think all these people were just solidly okay.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Nothing about this movie, other than some silly moments with Mr. Fantastic stretching and some of Alicia Masters had some weird moment where she was all like, Ben Grimm, I love you, or something like, I'm in love with you, or some weird, and it was like, whoa, what the hell, that came out
at
of
at least they built up the Reed Sue thing, but the Alicia Masters Ben thing was completely left.
And then the weird where Dr. Doom kept touching people's mouths and rubbing their faces, that was weird. Other than that, like, nothing in this movie, I kept expecting to be like, oh my god. Really, the only thing to me was, as we were watching it, I'm like, I don't understand why the jeweler's in this movie. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't really in it enough for me to be like, this is a problem. Like, they didn't devote half the film to him. I don't know, like, I didn't think that this was really that bad.
No.
I think that it was so short that if this movie would have been like an extra 10 to 15 minutes, you'd be like, holy fuck, we gotta get this over with. Or if there would have been like one more act, it would have been like, oof, this is rough. But it just sort of I kept expecting to have that one actor who was gonna like, get this guy off the screen. Mm. But even that never really happened, and I was looking for it. I was trying to find it, and I couldn't. It was really and even the, like I said, the effects, I was so impressed with the thing. I was like, I was kind of forgiving some other shit.
And to answer the question posed by Kevin Smith, the thing does not have a dick, because I've seen full frontal suit nudity, and he's a Rocky Ken doll. So
that's got
to
be
why he wanted to die.
That's part of the
torture.
That's
why he wanted to die.
That's got to be part of the torture of his life, right? Mm-hmm. No, I get it.
Well, how do you know it doesn't like just curve out?
What, like the rocks part, and like his thong comes
so
out.
So is it a stalagmite or a stalactite? Which one grows in and which one
that
grows
explains
out?
His depression and his heavy drinking through all the comics. Now
he doesn't drink.
Dude, he was always hanging out at a bar.
He was smoking cigars. He didn't drink. I don't remember.
Did you ever not see him not drink?
I'll be frank. I don't even remember him drinking water off the top of my head. You know, I think maybe in some of the John Byrne thing issues, I don't remember him drinking anything.
Do you recall a lot of superheroes stopping for a fucking Topo Chico? I don't think I ever saw Batman drink water.
I've seen Batman.
I'm concerned. Bruce might be maybe
he's not hydrated enough for what he's doing.
Bruce isn't traumatized by his parents. The dude's fucking dehydrated. Get the man a Dasani or a fucking Smart Water.
Put a little twist of lime on it.
Hung fluids on him in the past. So
Bruce, grab an Avion. You want to kill all your friends whenever you have you're thirsty.
Actually, if you
like
watch
a Snickers break, but just like hydration.
If you watch the Fantastic Four movies after this one, the story one, who's the right?
Yeah, Tim Story.
I believe Ben Grimm meets Miss Masters at a bar. She buys him a beer, and he has like this big jug, and he's chugging.
You know, he has drunk beer. You're right. I've seen
in your face. Ugh, franking it. There you go.
You got fixed.
When you give him a bone, he really rides that bone.
Oh, hell yeah, dude. I got injured for the few moments I have. So see, heavy drinker.
I remember when the 2005 movie came out, I remember saying that this was the better movie. And I know you just
love starting the fights. Dude,
no, I remember he has died on this hill for a long time.
But it's not just me. A lot of people, if you go online, you'll see there's a lot of people who defend this movie. One of the first things you're going to find when you search this movie is, will Marvel ever do a movie as great as the 1994 Fantastic Four? There are a lot of people on that hill. Having rewatched the movie for the first time in a long time, I would argue that it's probably about equal or less than the 2005 movie, just because the production values are pretty low. But I think what this movie does is it coasts on charm.
Mm-hmm.
It, there's a lot of heart. You can tell that everybody who's involved in this movie
is really trying.
But most of them didn't do other things, and there's a reason for that, honestly. You know, not to be cruel, but...
Well, the technology wasn't there.
But they definitely have... the acting wasn't there.
Well, there goes me tagging the actors in this.
But it is charming. It definitely has that, you know, the small town's going to get together and put on a play kind of feel to it.
Footloose.
It's very comic reverential. They're trying really, with what they have, they're trying their best to do the comics. And you're always going to appreciate that, because when you're a fan of the material, you don't want them to fucking tweak it and give Dr. Doom electro powers and shit.
I'll give them that. They stayed faithful to the source material, and I respect that.
Yeah.
They were like, we are going down in flames, no pun intended, honoring the source material. Fucking, we are having these costumes to be exactly. Exactly. We're talking like the exact shade of blue. We're not doing it almost black. Yeah. We're not putting them in leather. Mm-hmm. Like,
this. I mean, I do appreciate that Doom looks like Doom, because yeah. every other film with Doom is not Doom.
Well, and I think it's very smart too, because they could have gone cheap. They could have done like a Jim and the Holograms bullshit. And all you're going to do, as we saw with Jim and the Holograms, is turn off the fan base, because if you don't have fidelity to the material, there's no reason to see your bullshit cheap ass movie. So the smart thing was lean into the comics as much as possible, because at least you'll keep you have a base. Your fans will be happy.
It's kind of weird that like after so many missteps with Marvel movies after this, or in any comic movie really in general, you probably could have just been like, they kind of had the formula right. Just stick to the fucking source material, and if you get good enough actors and a decent budget, people are gonna, it's gonna be good. And that's what you look at this. This was maybe a one level up of actors and a little larger budget away from being like.
But the Tim Story really movie isn't that far from this. It's not that dissimilar from this. I think that the humor was not so great, even though you had a director who's supposed to be known for humor. The humor wasn't that great.
Well, okay. Well, I'm gonna say. Well, okay, come finish your point, and then I'll get back to. I had a butt.
Yeah, I honestly think there was a lot of people who were hung up overly much on Jessica Alba's casting. I think that was one of those deals where specifically because of the actor not being Lily White, I think a lot of people had some problems with the movie. But also the fact is that the thing does not look nearly as good in the big budget movie as he does in the smaller movie. And he doesn't look enough like the one from the comics, and I think that hurt it some.
Okay, do you want to hear my...
But in terms of quality, I really don't think it's all that dissimilar in terms of... It's not. It doesn't have the same degree of fidelity to the material, but it's not completely far afield either.
Okay, so here's the but. The but is you need to stick to the source material and have a higher budget and good actors. The but is that it's the Fantastic Four, and it's just too fucking hokey. It's the source material is too hokey. Like, stick to the source material for Captain America. You're going to war, cosmic cubes, Nazis.
They still changed the outfit, and they still took away a lot of material that would have been too goofy. So there's adaptation. Isn't a dirty word. You do have to figure out what works in the other medium. Just don't automatically assume that anything in the comic book is stupid. And what do you want to wear, yellow spandex? You got to find a medium between those two.
What
extremes.
I'm saying. So Reed Richards' source material is that he's stretchy. Like, it's not ever going to really work on screen.
Actually, I thought that was one of the things they did pretty well in the Trank movie.
Trank movie,
because they played into like the weird body horror quality of that. So.
Right.
Didn't he wear like braces too or some shit like that? Like
to like keep him together. No, that was in...
No, I think he did. He there's a part where Ben Grimm goes after him, and he has like braces. I've only seen it once. Yeah, I've seen it once.
But so what I'm saying is that I think in the Fantastic Four's case, it's different than like Iron Man and Captain America and Thor. For them, I think the low budget makes the hokiness of it charming.
Right.
Whereas when you try and go high budget with Fantastic Four, it's like, thing looks fucking... He's still orange? Like, oh, this is terrible. And it's like, oh, Reed Richards is going to stretch around.
Well, that's just it, though.
Human Torch is the only one it works with.
The Trank movie did try to do the darker, grittier version, and that shit didn't work either.
Well, but then they like butchered too, because I think wasn't Bim Grimm was even used like a weapon? Because I remember they kept showing that one scene that I wanted to see where he's like dropped like a bomb on us and he's killing. He's like killing soldiers.
There's a cool dark edit out there that you're never going to see. It's a fucking masterpiece. I think it's probably some grim dark bullshit.
Release the Trank cut. Hashtag release the Trank cut.
Get that shit trending.
Yeah.
Where are you, Ben Affleck?
I think you can do big rocky orange thing. I think you can go there with the Fantastic Four. I mean, the Hulk needed to be toned down some. I don't know if the thing really works toned down. I think you'd play him up. I think he should have been played up. I think that you...
I thought the thing looked good in that movie,
I think you big hero six of Fantastic Four. You know, you lean into the family friendliness, but I do think you need to have a little bit of cool sci-fi kind of stuff too. Me and Fix It, we're talking about the Black Hole. We both watched it on Disney Plus. And you got to strike that balance of like wonder and like family dynamics, but also give it a little bit of an edge so that it's not so that
it
plays.
It doesn't turn off the older kids.
Turn off the cool. And it's difficult to strike that balance, and I can't say which director would be the guy to do that. But I do think you've got to be able to do like the cool sci-fi wonder stuff. You can't just make it the sweet family story, because I think both this movie and the Tim Story movies do that, and I don't think that's enough. You got to be able to do that wonder. You got to do that awe. You got to be a little scary at times too.
So I think you described a good animated movie.
All right. So they always say that the Incredibles is Fantastic Four.
Okay, so I totally just spaced out on the fucking Incredibles.
Yeah,
that's why I think it works for the Incredibles, because you can balance the hokiness with the fact that it's animated, and I think like even the stretchy shit looks better animated than it does having to have like an actor's head stretch around. Like, yeah. You cannot make it look right.
So
do it animated.
So what
it's
do you
too
think about when Marvel reboots everything, the Fantastic Four movies? Because they're going to. They own it now.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to, do you think they're going to look at Incredibles? Because everyone talks about how Incredibles is the Fantastic Four movie they've always wanted.
They'd be foolish not to, honestly.
To go that route, make it more kid-friendly, more maybe Pixar.
Maybe get Brad Bird. I don't know. Maybe that's the way to go. Right. I'm not a big fan of that because I think that the person already did their Fantastic Four movie. So don't go and find somebody who did something kind of similar and have them do it over again. I don't know if that really works. Although then again, Joe Johnson with Captain America: The First Avenger had already kind of done that movie with the Rocketeer, and that worked out pretty well too.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
You know, so maybe you do go to a guy like a Brad Bird and see if he can strike that balance.
Yeah, because you're right. That Fantastic Four needs that balance of family and.
But I would argue though, the thing about the Incredibles is, yeah, it's a Fantastic Four movie, but it's also kind of a Watchmen thing going on as well.
A what?
Kind of a Watchmen thing going on as well though, because they've outlawed the hero.
Oh, yeah.
And there's these things they don't like to talk about. They kind of swept it all under the rug. I think you need some.
And it's still dark though, dude. Because when you have that the main villain in Incredibles,
don't
the first
spoil
one.
The Incredibles for anybody who hasn't seen it in the last 20 years. Well, but yeah, he's like a fucked up sidekick.
Well, not just that though. But when they show him like testing his device or his robot on people, they've murdered heroes. Like there's skeletal remains of heroes. And I remember thinking, wow, that's really dark. Like I did not expect that in a fucking Pixar movie when I saw that movie the first time.
Yeah. Well, but I really feel like one of the things I really liked about Trent is that he was trying to do more sci-fi, get more of that sci-fi into there. And I really do feel like you got to get somebody who can do that sci-fi wonder. I want somebody who can take us into the negative zone. I want somebody who can go or get subterranean with the Mole Man, like somebody who could do the monster stuff. So
make
maybe,
it more fantastical.
Was it Gareth Edwards who did the first Godzilla? Oh, what about the guy who did Skull Island?
That would work. Yeah. I love Skull Island. I thought it was a great one.
They did a decent job of the camaraderie and stuff, but they also were able to do like, whoa, my God, there's these giant monsters and everything. Yeah, I don't know if the science really plays out in that because it's more of a Vietnam movie.
Well, no, it was kind of, well, no, yeah, I guess you were, it was a but it was also a Moby Dick movie where Samuel Jackson, you know, Kong becomes this white whale and he's gonna kill everyone to get his white whale. And that was a great scene too. Like I really liked Samuel Jackson just went over it because from the beginning of the movie
I think we're going into like a pretty deep tangent.
Oh, well, my bad.
It's not the Skull Island podcast. But
I think this is all terrible because at the end of the day, Mr. Fantastic stretches. You gotta make it animated.
Maybe you don't have him stretch, or maybe you.
No, dude, that's black. He has to stretch.
Does he?
Yes.
Is it? Really, because I mean, think about
he got to reach and grab the beaker from across the room.
About Reed Richards on this podcast, and this is 100 and some odd episodes at this point, we don't ever talk that much about the stretching. We talk about the brilliance. We talk about how smart he is. Maybe you do like they did with the Terrifics, and just he doesn't stretch. He's just super brilliant. He becomes more brilliant, and they don't even touch the stretching shit.
Maybe
he doesn't have to stretch.
That's fine. I'm just saying. Then when people are you're gonna see, oh hey, the new Fantastic Four movie's coming out. Leaked rumors from the set say Mr. Fantastic isn't gonna stretch. People are gonna be like, oh. They're not going to do it right, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Even though they themselves know how terrible it is when he's stretching on screen. I think that then you got to bet, then it's you turn into a whole Trank thing.
There's another argument, though. We haven't seen Marvel do it.
True.
And Marvel's had CGI on Marvel is just the next level.
True, that's true. I would kind of like to see what they do with it.
If I'm willing to let anybody take one more shot at it, I'll let Marvel take a shot at it. With that said, if Marvel said they were going to come out with an animated Fantastic Four, like
Pixar,
like a motion picture, I would be freaking out because I know they would go and get, they would have a different take on the animation. I would know that other superheroes can appear in it. It doesn't have to be related to the Marvel universe. Make it its own like standalone animated feature film,
kind of like the Spider Into the Spider-Verse.
Thank you, God. Thank you for helping me in this podcast because my brain is not putting things together. If they were doing a Spider-Verse take and it was going to be Fantastic Four, sign me the fuck up. That's what I think you need because I think
style.
It negates the hokiness and then you can go crazy with the animation. Nothing's going to look is because it just has a potential to look so bad.
Mm-hmm. Well, and
but I would have said the same thing about Ant-Man 2.
You have to
incorporate
the Fantastic Four into the Marvel Cinematic Universe though. So at some point you're probably going to have to see a live action Reed stretching because it can't just be exclusively animation.
They only bring in the Thing. We don't ever see the Fantastic Four. They're somewhere in the universe, but they're never.
You have the rest of the Fantastic Four. The only one's the problem here is Reed. Nobody's complaining about Human Torch or Invisible Woman. So why you know? Go ahead and have them. Just maybe don't show Reed stretching in the live action if it's going to be that much of a problem. But I will say this about this movie. I was never a Fantastic Four guy. You know, as a kid, I had the book and record, the How It All Began. I think it was a Roy Thomas, John Buscema joint. And I liked the record okay, but it never inspired a love for Fantastic Four. Whenever the rare times that I would try Fantastic Four, specifically any time that John Byrne wasn't doing it, but even the simple fact that John Byrne was doing Fantastic Four, and I still didn't buy it regularly, shows how little interest I had in the concept. So while I didn't hate on the Fantastic Four, I was completely disinterested. And what I recall is how much Alex Ross hated the X-Men until he saw the 2000 movie. And he saw the potential of them, and it humanized them for him, and all of a sudden he started painting the X-Men all the time because suddenly they worked for him in a way they hadn't before he'd seen them in the movie that released the potential in his eyes. And I feel the same way about this movie. Before I saw this movie, as silly and cheesy as it is, there was something about the heart in the movie that made me understand the Fantastic Four in a way that I hadn't before. And while I'm not like a big Fantastic Four fan, I do have an affection for them that I didn't have before the movie, and I did see the potential in them and want to see. I've given Fantastic Four tries a number of times now, and really it goes back to this movie. I liked it enough where I would like to see somebody do a great thing with the Fantastic Four. It just hasn't quite happened yet. And I've seen every Fantastic Four movie, so there must be something to that.
So how about this? How would you feel if, like, Reed, for example, is introduced into the Marvel Universe pre-accident? So he is a brilliant scientist that the heroes keep consulting with.
Tony Stark type.
Well, I think at this point they need him.
I think the one positive about Endgame for me, given that I'm not here, is that in the absence of Tony Stark, and with the anticipated absence of Peter Parker, who, let's face it, has not proven himself to be particularly brilliant anyway. I don't give a fuck with it. He's not. He's smart.
He's carried
in those movies a lot. You need another Tony Stark, and Reed and the Fantastic Four are really the guys who could kind of rally the Marvel Universe, because you really do get a sense of the absence of Cap and Tony. And I think it's a gaping hole in their universe, and I think we're going to feel that throughout the Phase 4.
Yeah.
I think that might be part of the point of Phase 4 is, yeah, that we're going to bring in all these different, like, they're going to try to do more diversity and try to introduce a lot of new concepts. But I think part of it is going to be like, but we need that core that we don't have it anymore.
Let's say Stephen Strange is like, I need, so like in the multiverse movie he's going to be in, needs somebody who he knows is a brilliant scientist and who can explain multiverses and stuff. And he goes, I'm a doctor. I know of a famous doctor.
And suddenly
he's at the fucking Baxter building and it's Reed Richards. The fucking theater would explode, even though he has not gone into space and been inundated with cosmic rays yet. But suddenly, like, the little pin is there that now we know Reed Richards is
and
in the
building is in New York.
I think if he shows up in a couple of Phase 4 movies, the motherfucking can stretch wherever he wants, because at that point he's established and we love the character and he's doing shit to help heroes.
And you could even do the origins different. You could do the origins is different. It doesn't have to be we're in a spacecraft going into space getting hit.
No, I think you do.
Every time they try to change that, we get pissed off. The fandom gets pissed off.
I rewatched Captain Marvel, and I love the fact that she got her powers from the Tesseract. I think that was fucking.
But who cares about fucking Captain?
That's not a foundational myth of the Marvel Universe.
They're the first family of the Marvel. They are the birthplace of the Silver Age Marvel Universe, and they missed out on the birthplace of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But they still got to be inundated. I'm still really anxious
to see how they get incorporated. How do you do that? I like
Mac's idea. I like the fact that he's introduced as, hey, I got a guy that I can go talk to, and one day
something's gonna happen to him, but it hasn't happened.
We just don't know when.
But I think if you establish him and you get a really good actor and people really really like him and he pops in a couple times and you don't give a shit if he's stretching later on.
I just really don't like them coming in this late.
Well, it's too bad.
No, he's always been there.
They've done this in the past. That's how they've worked out Ant-Man. There was already an Ant-Man years ago, and we just didn't know because he was a covert operative. You have them have their mission, and instead of crashing in a field somewhere, they're in the fucking negative zone or some shit, and then you see them coming back. But I guess that would work too.
But that'd be kind of weird.
You have a movie that's set before the current universe, and then they come.
Reed and them are from the fucking 40s, and they got some space shuttle, and they go to space and teleport and come back.
They did that already. So let's.
It didn't work with Michelle Pfeiffer. She went somewhere. She got power. She came back. Fucking turned into ET. Didn't work. Worst Marvel movie.
But with Captain Marvel, it kind of works because she was around before as Iron Man as well. I think, correct? Was she supposed to be set before? before Iron Man, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, 96, right?
Yeah.
94, 96. So, yeah, you can do a similar thing, just don't go so far back, and you just have them fuck off someplace for a little while, and then they come back. Or they can do a little bit of baby time travel. It doesn't have to be full-on Captain America. I mean, obviously, time's all fucked up now anyway. They could have gotten lost in the multiverse, and that's how they run into fucking Stephen Strange. He's like, who the fuck are you guys? You
know? I just like it better if it was establishing him for a couple movies, and then, like I said, if he just shows up and starts stretching around, you're like, this fucking asshole.
Yeah.
But I think if you've established him and you've gotten everybody's juices flowing for him and then you know what's going to happen, you're already setting yourself up for the fact that he'll be stretching around later, and I think maybe you'll forgive the dumbness of it. Or if he only stretches a couple times.
Kind of like what the Winter Soldier were. When he was introduced, you're like, well, that's Bucky. That's going to be the Winter Soldier. And then they kind of like lead into him being the Winter Soldier was kind of cool. When he falls off the train and shit and...
Yeah.
You know he's coming back later.
Yeah, you knew he's coming back. I mean, I knew he was Winter Soldier from the comics, but when he came back, it was a little bit cooler too. It was like, oh shit, like you knew it was going to happen. Just not win.
Well, and the thing too is Iron Man is a contemporary to the Fantastic Four. He comes after them, but not a lot afterwards. So how cool it would be to have a flashback, get a little bit more Robert Downey Jr. and kind of show them in that early part, not unlike what happened with fucking Vulture too. Vulture, we see that he's working in the aftermath of the first Avengers movie, and it sets shit up. We love it when they do that.
Yeah, that's true.
They do that with the Fantastic Four as well. Maybe they've been on a government project all these years and they're finally now busting out because there's a need for them. I don't know.
I'm curious how they're going
to
introduce them. There's a lot of, I mean, just us bullshitting here, it's given them a lot of different ways you could introduce them, from the very subtle to the...
There's still a Bruce Banner connection. Mm-hmm. He's not technically out of the Marvel Cinematic Universe yet, right? So they could always
but
do
it. We got to have a Thing Hulk battle at some point.
Oh, it's not going to happen. Don't set yourself up. It's not
going to
happen.
Gosh, that's dude. I love it with Thor and him went at it.
I think a lot of Hulk's going to be just kind of done with. Don't get yourself revved up for many more Hulk. Meaningful Hulk appearance.
And I'm a Hulk guy and just...
I know. It's done. His story's done.
Yeah.
No.
I know.
Unless they do this shit where because he fucking bombarded himself with that radiation that the Fix-It persona comes out, and I'm like, well, that would be kind of cool.
I don't think you're going to get it. Don't stop. You're getting your hopes up. Don't get your hopes up for any more Hulk. I'm not saying he's not going to pop up a couple more times. Don't just stop. I think his story's done.
I can dream, man.
They're going to hand the... They're going to pass the torch will be to...
How the fuck
fucking
is Bruce
She-Hulk?
Banner supposed to be off like playing with computers and shit when shit goes down? I don't buy that.
I hear that Ruffalo signed on for all of Phase 4,
doesn't
and he's
be Ruffalo. They started the fucking movie series with Ed Norton,
dude. They don't need him, they just got his CG face hurt.
Well, that and the great thing is Ed Norton can, I don't know if he's in a fat suit or he actually put on weight for that Blackwater movie he's doing, but they've got the CGI already there. He doesn't physically have to appear in any of this shit. He can go in there and do his fucking
lines,
mocap shit. Yeah. So there's no reason to get rid of him, and you don't necessarily have to keep him either.
I feel like this next phase is they've closed the book on all, like, we're not going to talk about Cap very much anymore.
I think Thor's going to be around a little bit
there's
longer.
There's no lasting legacy of
Thor,
Iron. Yeah, Thor is going to be basically it, I think.
Thor, because he's going to be in Guardians, and then he's going to have his own flick. And
well, you think that they're going to do a torch passing with Jane Foster? That doesn't really make a lot of sense to me either, though.
No, I don't think so.
Which is why
I don't really understand any of that. But
I don't think he wants out.
He says he loves being in those movies.
Yeah, I don't think he wants out. I think
he thought about wanting to get out until I think he had a few movies bomb. I think Men in Black, he is fully back in.
That one bombed bad, too. I was surprised.
Oh, dude.
I was surprised.
Me, too. I was actually kind of surprised that one bombed. I thought this has got to be just me, right, who has no interest in this film.
No, the only reason Men in Black was the house that Will Smith built.
It is from the house of Jiggy. You are correct.
Yeah, it had a terrible script, and the only reason why the movie worked was Will Smith. And
Tommy Lee Jones was good, too.
Yeah, Tommy Lee Jones was great. He's a great straight man.
But do you think he would have carried the entire movie without Will Smith being there?
No, of course not.
Lewis and Martin. Yeah, that whole vibe with them that worked so well with those movies. I still haven't seen
Riggs and Murtaugh.
I still haven't seen the new Men in Black International, and I want to watch it just to say I watched it.
I love the premise of Men in Black. I went to the ride in Orlando when we went that time just because I think it's a cool premise.
Oh no, the animated cartoon is great where they take the stories.
The cartoon was really cool. Yeah.
I mean, it was great. It was stylized. I love the different aliens.
I don't know if Chris Hemsworth and Tessa Thompson are going to be the guys.
What turned me off was when I saw that trailer and he's like taking a mini. They didn't work. They didn't have that magic together.
It's weird. I think that they do have chemistry together, which is so weird about it.
Yeah.
And honestly, it kind of kills my own point because I was like, why is every studio not getting Chris Evans and Robert Downey Jr. to just be in a fucking movie together? Or just make any movie, make Tango and Cash. 2020.
No. All right. Lethal Weapon.
Hobbs and Shaw 2 and put fucking, just get the two, pay them to be in a movie. It's not a Marvel movie. Pay them. Like, why are they not in movies together? Should you be? But then I saw Men in Black and I was like, oh, wait, they got two Marvel characters to be in a movie together. And it, no sauce, no juice from those two. Not that I don't think seeing Chris Evans and Robert Downey Jr. together wouldn't do that. Or get, why is Samuel L. Jackson, Robert Downey Jr. just in some random movie together? I don't understand why people aren't doing that.
Well, you had, was it the girl that played Captain Marvel and Samuel Jackson in her unicorn movie? Or?
Well, yeah, no, but they were in Skull Island together too.
Oh, that's right. Oh, no. Hell, they had Loki in Skull Island.
Brie Larson had a personality in Skull Island. Where the fuck was that shit going?
Okay.
Well, apparently we're going back to Skull Island now.
I don't want to go. Listen to our reviews of Captain Marvel on the Captain Marvel podcast. And all your complaints forward to at Commander Blanks on Twitter. Yeah, anyway,
so the first time.
So we're going to say thumbs up for Fantastic Four 94.
Thumb and pinky kind of weighing, ashy kind of thing.
Yeah. Best nap I've ever had.
Okay, let's do some mail. Quite Enough Sayers. This is a 97. Marvel Studios, the first 22 movie countdown. Keechee Baker writes, haven't listened yet, but I'm pretty sure you're wrong. King Egg writes, what is this? Ant-Man and the Wasp worse than Hulk and Dark World? Moist Sponge writes, what is this and why does everyone get a medal except for me? Oh, I think it's got to do with why are you in the Mary Marvel Marsh Society or some shit like that. Richard G. writes, thanks all. Thrilled to be included and included a Men in Black gift.
Take two.
History of Comics on Film wrote, where's that Hawkeye miniseries coverage?
Good question.
Yeah, it's all me. I'm sorry. Well, I mean, kind of all of us. You could push harder.
It's all of me.
So on episode 98, Wild Ages of Marvel, Darren Ruth wrote, fun. RVA Athletics fan wrote, so much fun.
Our next comment comes from Shag Matthews. Never heard of him. Fair warning to listeners. This was recorded 5 years ago. I can't remember what I ate for breakfast yesterday, so please don't hold me accountable for anything I said. I said what? And when did I say it? Is it okay to reveal that Frank has developed vocal database of me? Yeah, this is a deep fake, which he can program to say anything he wants. Hashtag true story.
I think the really damaging stuff was on the Patsy Walker episode, so it was a little late to reveal that. Ranger Gord included a gif of a dude rubbing hands with anticipation saying, a conversation with 5-year-old Shag Matthew.
Our next comment comes from Ryan Daly. I'm embarrassed at how long it took me to realize this episode was recorded 3 years ago.
I think it was pretty decent editing on that one. So
yeah, no, excellent.
Sounded good.
Odell Abner Dracula wrote, the only part I didn't like was personally confronting the absence of new Underguys episodes and included a Charlie Brown JPEG. Yeah, something we need to work on. Again, that's largely me. I should push some of that stuff harder, but no, I think we're going to take a break from Cerebus, and I think that may help things a little bit. So
our next comment comes from Illegal Machine. Underguides has always trending.
Who wrote this shit?
Underguides was always trending to be a Frank Fix-It show, so in many ways Underguides died so that we may have a spawn-off.
And actually, I've got some material from other people on Underguides, and Mac spearheaded the Dreadstar episode, which we should probably get back to Dreadstar. I think you actually read Martial Law and then we didn't keep up with you. I don't know if I would agree with you that characterization, but hopefully we'll have some Underguides in the relatively near future. I don't know if it'll be in 2019, but probably by early 2020, I would say.
Oh yes, definitely 2020.
Our next comment comes from Jennifer DeRoss. To counter just one of the moments in this episode that felt
heteronormative slash patriarchal,
Elvira was one of my first crushes.
And she included a gif from the movie Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, where she's pouring beer down people's crotches, dude people. You know.
That was a scene in the movie?
You remember that one? Yeah.
I remember seeing the movie in theaters because she had the poodle.
I saw it in theaters as well.
I might have blacked out at that moment. Maybe all the blood went to the other head and
I just blacked out.
The
two
theater.
Goons that worked for the British guy were trying to hit on her in a bowling alley or something. Yeah. You remember. Mac over here is nodding. He remembers.
Oh, I remember.
Firestorm fan, that guy again, wrote, holy crap, just listening. We recorded this 5 years ago. Jeez, Frank, you've been hanging on to this audio way too long. I apologize to anyone listening. We were randomly shooting the crap and hopefully we've grown as people over the past 5 years. To which Paul Hicks added, you would never know. Narrator, everyone knew.
Huge fan of narrator memes.
I actually think that's all the ones. I haven't gathered the audio for some of the other ones, so particularly the Secret Wars ones, so we'll have to come back to that one on another time, I think.
Fearless Facebook front facers include DeBash, Derek William Crabb, and Keith G. Baker. Retweet frantic ones include Between the Pages, Christine at Swim Gymwear, and Siskoid. Keepers of the Favorite Flame include After Forever, June 3rd through 5th, 1989 graphic novel. Cindy, not that That Cindy, Constantine Kotsiras, Dylan Baumgarten, Daniel French Fishbonius Sound Design, who also sent us a Disco Minion gift, Darren Ruth Sutherland, Doc Strange, Fat French and Fabulous, G.K. Wordsmith, Hobby Lighthouse, Into the Weird, Ja Rule, Jennifer DeRoss, J.F. Davis, King Dinosaur, The List Game, Long Box of Darkness, Martin Gray, Marty Light, Mike Gillis, Mike J. Millay, who wrote, Thank You, I Will Definitely Check It Out, Monster Kid Radio, Nook App, Otha Zachariah Edward Los, Patrick R. Carey, Polymer, which is a band, by the way, Rad Adventures Podcasting Network, RV Athletics Fan, who also wrote, Can't Wait, Ryan Daly, Schlocktopus Inc., Stu Perrins, who wrote, Thanks, Tim Wilsey II Turbo, Tom Beach, Wonder Woman Warrior for Peace Podcast, X-Men The Animated Series Podcast, which appears to be run by some folks who actually worked on the show in the 90s, and Doug Zawisha. Finally, the Merry Marvel Marching Society, 20th Century Geek, 108 Sage, Dr. Ange, Antonio Machado, Batter Bally, Bake Man Say, Bernie 2020, Billy at Excelsior 73, The Bitter Tweets of Sarah Von Century, Sweet, Coffee and Comics, Collected Edition, Dr. G Nerdologist, Dr. Pop Culture BGSU, Dirk Ashton, who sent us a thank you gift featuring Zach Galifianakis, I assume from The Hangover, Earl Smith, Aptisam, Fan Holes Pod, Firestorm Fan, Green Lantern HG, Hoping Santa Gets Me Salma Hayek. Hey, me too. The Huntress, Batgirl Podcast, The Hammer Strikes, Random Geeky Stuff, History of Comics on Film, Iowa's Joe Crawford, Irredeemable Shag, Jeffrey Brown, Jeremy J. Joseph, Just in Time with J&T Baggers, Kappa Pride Hulk, Keith G. Baker, Lisa Franklin, Marvel Universe Online, who also wrote Thanks for the Shoutout, Mike Rokitansky, Odell Abner Dracula, Paul Matthew Carr, Randy Caldwell, Resurrections, and Adam Warlock and Thanos Podcast, Richard Field, Scott at Pie My Handyman, Pie Me Handyman? Seer Wars Beyond Podcast, The Silver Cord, Slangward Scott, Stephen Kink, sorry, Stephen Kinnick, Straight Out of Gallifrey Podcast, Tim Price Podcrasher, and Tony Scipione.
The Marvel Superheroes Podcast is in no way affiliated with or endorsed by Marvel Entertainment. All characters mentioned and audio clips employed are believed covered under fair use, with no infringement intended against their copyright holders. Views expressed in this podcast are assumed legitimate, truthful, and solely possessed by the speaker.
Okay, so the way I figure it, you start the first Fantastic Four movie in 2007. Reed Richards is a wannabe Elon Musk, but he's also kind of like Chidi from The Good Place, where he's so fixated on being ethically sourced and creating science that is in no way applicable to any kind of weapons or anything, that he just can't get his company off the ground. Reed had tried and failed to woo Bruce Banner into working with them. He tries to bring Tony Stark in as an investor. Stark has no interest because he recognizes that Reed is never going to give him anything that will help him make any money, and that's all he cares about in 2007. Bill Foster used to work with him, but he quits because the checks kept bouncing. Reed's basically got one last shot to prove himself before he goes out of business, and that's why he takes up a ship with a skeleton crew, including their unpaid intern, Sue Storm, and her college dropout kid brother, who'd been hanging out with Ben. They get up into space, they get pelted with the cosmic rays. It not only supercharges them, but it supercharges whatever they're using to power the ship, and they basically fly off in light speed into parts unknown. It's essentially like Voyager. They're lost in space. They have no resources. There's only four of them. And they're slowly going through body horror changes. Johnny develops this horrible fever that's like 200 degrees. Ben has a skin condition that keeps getting worse and worse. You crack open the official handbook of the Marvel Universe. You find as many obscuro aliens as possible. Ones that don't have a lot to do with the greater Marvel Universe. So you can explore how far out into the reaches these guys have gotten without it tying into any of the movies initially. With a little bit of backstory, we reveal that Sue's been crushing on Reed for years. But because of their age difference, Reed doesn't want to entertain that. But as the movie progresses, it becomes clear that really they're each other's only option, because what's Sue going to do? Hook up with her brother or the rocky thing that's being developed out of Ben Grimm? But because he's her only option, that just adds to Reed's moral inflexibility. He's constantly pushing her away. You also get a chance to play up the camaraderie between Johnny and Ben, because again, they're kind of all each other has. They're the only normal, regular guys out in the far reaches of space. About the first half of the movie really isn't about any of these aliens
audience. It's about showing this family forming under these adverse conditions, showing the brilliance of Reed to get them out of all these scraps, showing the necessity of Ben Grimm as the muscle, Johnny as an energy source, and Sue is basically the person who keeps everything together. But also recognizing that Sue doesn't have the voice that the other people have to highlight her invisibility to them, giving motivation for her to find her voice and find her power as the movie progresses. Eventually, the team work their way into Kree and Skrull space. They mostly have problems with the Skrulls. They get some help from the Kree. Problem being that we're now years into their being lost in space, and Johnny is so damned horny that he ends up hooking up with a Skrull, and because of that association with the Skrulls, it queers the deal with the Kree, and the Fantastic Four are caught in between these two warring factions. Gives them a chance to run into Ronan, maybe stop him from doing some genociding, maybe finally give Ronan a chance to not look like a total punk in one of these movies. We get a Yon Raj cameo. We maybe get a few more familiar aliens. Maybe get Yondu and some of the Ravagers in the mix. Play on the nostalgia that people have for the Marvel Cinematic Universe at this point, since it's been going on for so many years now, and so many of these characters are no longer with us. The movie builds towards this final gambit where basically the Fantastic Four, even though they now have the means and the knowledge to return to Earth because of their conflict specifically with the Kree, they can't go back without putting the Earth in peril, especially because by this point they've gotten to be so famous that they're public enemy number one among the Skrulls, among the Kree, and probably a few more alien races besides. And then in the midst of this final major confrontation, all of a sudden the snapping, Sue's gone, Johnny's gone, half the Kree are gone, half the Skrulls are gone. Nobody really cares about fighting at that point. Heartbroken, Reed and Ben go back to Earth. Reed toils in anonymity. He uses his big brain to help them deal with all the consequences of the snapping, all that stuff that you read on Reddit threads about what would really happen if half of everything disappeared. Reed's quietly helping with all that stuff. When Scott Lang finally shows up at Avengers HQ and the Avengers go to talk to Tony Stark, we find out the reason why Tony Stark was able to solve the ability to travel through time via the microverse is because he was consulting with Reed on Skype. Meanwhile, Ben has also been helping out the Secret Avengers and all that kind of thing, started a new relationship with Alicia Masters. He's at this point been a rocky thing for the better part of 15 years thanks to the time jump from Endgame, and Reed of course has constantly been distracted or not had the resources to help his friend. But because so much of his identity is tied up in being the Thing, Ben is now at a place where maybe he doesn't even want to be a human again, especially with this reinforcement through Alicia and the reinforcement of the need for Thing, given that there aren't a lot of other superheroes thanks to the snapping. You end the movie with Endgame. Before the snapping, perhaps Reed had finally gotten to a point where he realized he needed to stop leading Sue on, or he needed to end the relationship that they'd had because of all of his moral problems. Sue was probably tired of his bullshit. And so by the time the snapping comes back, Reed's gone 5 years without this love of his life. He's ready to finally commit, and she's like, in her mind, they just broke up. So you've created this tension between the two of them. Maybe at some point she hooked up with one of the Kree soldiers or something, gives her a chance to go from being an invisible girl to invisible woman, and a chance to play around with Reed's perspective and give you some tension in that relationship, something they tried to do in the Tim Story movies and it didn't really work. But I think under this circumstance, it'd make more sense, especially as Reed is progressively older. Imagine Sue shows up and this guy who was already like 10 years or senior is now another 5 years on top of that. You know, she's got all these fresh resentments. So it gives you something to do with sequels. We do not even mention Dr. Doom, although in a sequel we reveal that he's actually spent his time since college conquering Latveria. Maybe he started work on other European nations, and that's what would bring him to the fore, especially because at the end of the first Fantastic Four movie is when they would finally unveil themselves, because they'd be the new heroes coming up now that the Avengers have been decimated, the public heroes that we know of today, having had all this experience, all these encounters with space figures that only recently have come into the Avengers sphere. So it gives them something to be a pioneers at, and because of them playing around with the timeline, we get to see that they've been around from the beginning as well. We get to see all these people at their best, and we get to spend all the time, or the majority of the time, with the four people, really getting to know them and getting to care about them and putting them in situations where they're more sympathetic and not trying to just force everything into one movie. All these aliens and all these things they're encountering, maybe spends more time with Celestials than we've gotten to previously. We really get to play with the exploration. We get to show these characters in their most specifically adept milieu. They're supposed to be explorers. They're supposed to be tackling the unknown. One of the problems with the movies that have come out in the past is they're mostly just hanging around on Earth fighting Dr. Doom over and over again. So it gives them a chance to explore, but more importantly, it gives them a chance to see these people in adversity so you care more about them. And it's not just about them telling you, hey, you're supposed to love these characters. It gives you an opportunity to actually love them through their actions, through their interactions, and through the difficulty of being four people trapped on a ship for such a long period of time. And it also allows them to retroactively be veterans of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, rather than just relative Johnny-come-latelys. And of course, that also sets up the love triangle between Namor, Reed, and Sue for a next movie. And we haven't even gotten started on all the Mole Man stuff that we talked about in previous episodes. know, have a nostalgic trip through the Marvel Cinematic Universe as we've known it up to this point, and show lots of Reed doing cool stretching using the superior CGI we've seen at Marvel. I think the problem that Mac has is he hasn't had a chance to see Marvel apply their magic to Mr. Fantastic, and getting a chance to show how weird it would be for this flesh and bone thing to stretch and contort their body the way that Mr. Fantastic would. If you think about it, in most of these movies, all he does is stretch his arm really long, and that's inherently silly.